A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, you're listening to a special episode of Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim, where we're speaking to Jordan Prince Wright, director of new Australian film Before Dawn.
I'm Timmy Fland, movie buff.
And I'm Lee Livingstone, entertainment journalist.
And we love to talk all things movies.
So let's do that.
Let's do it, Lee. So let's talk about Before Dawn, which is the retelling of one of Australia's most significant triumphs during World War I, based on authentic war diaries. Jim Collins, a young man from the outback, joins the Anzac to fight on the Western Front. However, the ruthless and unforgiving nature of war begins to weigh heavily on him. As the battalion dwindles and hope fades, Jim's redemption comes in a pivotal moment.
Before Dawn is directed by Jordan Prince Wright, from a screenplay by Jared Russell, from a story by Jordan Prince Wright.
Before Dawn stars Levi Miller, Ed Oxenbold, Stephen Peacock, Miles Pollard, Oscar Miller, Travis Jeffrey, Tim Franklin and Isaac Davies.
Australian filmmaker Jordan Prince Wright is one to watch. Having produced and directed countless short films, he directed his first feature, The Decadent and Depraved, in 2018. A graduate of the Australian Academy of Performing Arts in Western Australia, or WAPA, as it's affectionately known here.
WAPA.
WAPA. He was also selected as the Young Australian Filmmaker of the Year in 2014.
It was the discovery during his high school years of compelling diary entries from Anzac soldiers from World War I that eventually led him to his biggest project yet, Before Dawn.
Shot in Western Australia, the film aims to weave the individual stories found in the diaries into the broader historical tapestry of World War I, offering a nuanced perspective on the experiences of those who lived through the horror on the Western Front.
In an in-depth conversation with the filmmaker, Popcorn Podcast learns of Jordan Prince Wright's passion for these untold stories, his tenacious pursuit in casting lead Levi Miller, how nothing could quite prepare him for the scale of this production, and how they got blamed for a 2.4 magnitude earthquake in Esperance.
Incredible.
Very interesting.
Let's take a listen.
Let's get to it.
Here they come!
Jordan, thanks for joining the podcast. I'm really excited to talk to you about your film Before Dawn. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's been 4 years of labor and love. Let's put it that way.
Is that right? My gosh. Well, I kind of want to go back a little further, actually. Talk to me about the journey this film has taken to get here, because we have to go all the way back to your high school years. Is that right? Because that's where you discovered these unknown diary entries from our Anzacs.
Yeah, I actually went to the Army Museum of Western Australia and found these diaries, just a few diaries. And yeah, I was like, look, these are incredible stories. And wow, you know, I did a bit more digging and came across more diaries at Canberra and few other museums. And I started talking to people going, oh, you know, World War I, the Anzacs, and everyone was saying Gallipoli, Gallipoli, Gallipoli. And I'm going, no, there's Mezins Ridge, Polygon Wood, Hindenburg Line, and 90% of people I spoke to, they weren't actually aware that the Anzacs continued fighting beyond Gallipoli, which is remarkable. You know, it blew my mind that people weren't aware of this. So it's been on my bucket list ever since to go, this is a story that needs to be told. We need people to be aware of the story and the sacrifices that those guys did, those guys and girls did for us.
Right, because, you know, one of my questions was, why do you think these stories are so important to tell even after all these years? But I guess you've highlighted something pretty profound that even it makes sense. You think of World War One, Australia, and our involvement was in Gallipoli, but there are so many more stories, personal stories about these men and women that are untold. And here is your film to help bridge that gap, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're talking about some of Australia's greatest military victories, and they are not well known, you know, and that was something where, like I said, I just found it remarkable that they weren't well known. I was like, well, we have to tell this, you know, we have to tell the story. And being able to put this story out there, being able to go, this is such a massive production, how are we going to do this? And then just being really ignorant and going, yeah, you know what, we're going to do it anyway. That's exactly what we did. But yeah, the diaries were really intricate stories, are very personal stories. The events were incredible, but it was like, okay, how do I put this on a bigger scale? And that's what the challenge that we tried to do.
I want to talk about your sort of inception as a filmmaker. In your young career, you've delivered countless short films and a feature, which has generated a lot of recognition and promise as a filmmaker in yourself. How did you use those formative years to prepare yourself for something on the scale, like you said, of Before Dawn?
I don't think I did, put it bluntly. I think what it was is that I just was like, yeah, let's make this film. Let's make another one. Let's make another one. And I was just really passionate and I loved Look, I love film. I love telling stories. For me, it's if I can tell a story, if I can take an audience on a journey, an emotional journey where they walk out of that cinema feeling great, feeling sad, feeling attached to a character, then I've done my job. And being able to start seeing audiences react to that with the short films, and then I was like, okay, now I've always wanted to make a Western. You know, I grew up watching Yul Brynner, John Wayne, Steve McQueen. Quite frankly, I was born in the wrong era. And so I was like, I have to, you know, I've got to make a Western. But in the back of my mind, I always had this film, Before Dawn. It was always sitting there going, okay, but I can't just go in now and make a World War One movie. It wouldn't be right, because it is based on true events. It is such a massive thing. So each film has been a bit of a stepping stone, like you say. So the short films have assisted in me finding the team that I work with. The feature film has kind of assisted me in the way that how I fund films. It's very unconventional. It's not your usual funding body. It's going to sponsors. It's going to corporations, government, organizations directly, like various shires that we're filming in, going, hey, look, we're actually going to be filming here. We're putting this particular shire and location on the map. So how about we get some money in return for it, you know, tourism areas, etc. And so kind of then going, wow, that actually worked with The Decadent Depraved, which was that Western feature. Now let's do that again, but on steroids. But then also being able to go, okay, what worked? What didn't work film-wise? And yeah, and look, don't get me wrong, Before Dawn is also just another stepping stone for the next one again.
Yes, I'll ask you about that later on in the chat, because I'm very curious. Now, I want to talk about Levi Miller. He's been doing the rounds in Hollywood for quite some time. His casting must have been a really big win for you. How did that come about?
So when we were writing the script, I already had it in my head that I think I saw him in Pan. And then I, you know, did a bit of Google and all that, and it's like, oh, by the time we're ready to film this, he'll probably be around the age, you know. And for me, it was that he had the Hollywood, like a golden era blue eyes, you know, when a lot of the male actors had that. And for me, the character of Jim had to have that, because I wanted to be able to show the innocence, but also having those piercing eyes through the mud and all that, you know, it was, that was something quite important. So then I saw Levi and went, wow, you know, he's a really good actor. And I just made a phone call and spoke to his agent. So this is what I've got.
Sent to the phone call. Yeah,
that's it. And look, don't get me wrong, it's even with the sponsors, you know, I'll send 300 emails. Five people will get back to me. Out of those five people, there'll be two that want to have meetings, and one will say, yes, we'll sponsor and we'll give you funding, you know, or investors, vice versa. And With Levi, it was like, yep, he's interested. A week later, heard nothing. Another phone call. So it would have got to a point that the agent was sick of hearing from me. That was like, fine. He would have gone, fine, whatever. Have a meeting with Levi. Yeah, sure enough, had the meeting with Levi over Zoom, and he said he loved the script. He was really keen to be involved. The Australian agent was fantastic as well. And then we had to, you know, get the UK and the American agents on board, which, you know, that came with its own hurdles. But because Levi was so passionate about the project and he wanted to do this, that really assisted with the driving force. And then, you know, I started getting Miles Pollard and Stephen Peacock and Ed Oxenbold, and all, as soon as all they started coming on board, that was it. You know, well and truly, I was getting that ensemble cast.
Yeah. Levi has a beautiful connection to the script and how he delivers his character of Jim, because Jim really carries the film naturally. His character arc is really profound. You know, he's experiencing war, loss, and he's wrestling with his guilt, of course, about leaving his family behind. What was the most crucial part for you about the aspect of the character you wanted to ensure was delivered? Was it more than just that innocence? Was there something else that you wanted to make sure he nailed?
Look, for me, as it was, Levi and I spoke about it quite regularly, because we're going, okay, he's coming from the station and the outback. And like he says at the front, the front of the film is, oh, this, it's horse shit and sheep and, you know, anything's better than this, when in fact, well, it's not. And so we did want to capture that innocence, but not in the innocence that was at the forefront, like it was obvious. It was just that I'm sick of dealing with this sort of thing, and I want to get out there. I want to go to the front. Levi and I discussed it quite regularly, because we were going, okay, how do we do this so that it's not so obvious and so stereotypical that he's leaving the station? So naturally now, because he's leaving the station, he, you know, he then goes to the war and, oh no, the war's really bad. And what Levi and I discussed is that it was actually going to be the small moments. It was, yes, he loses his mates, but it was the small moments of when he's going through the mud. It's when his foot gets stuck. It's when later he's transporting the German soldier and he gets stuck again. And it's just like everything starts to wear down. And it was the small moments that we were finding that was going to be working his character in the arc more. Mm. And look, we did a lot of rehearsals and that sort of thing, but it was actually when we got to the set and Levi looked at the set and he turned around to me and went, yeah, this isn't going to be that hard, because you guys have literally built a massive set.
You did. You know? It's extraordinary. I want to talk about that right now, actually, Jordan. It feeds into the word authenticity, because it's something audiences demand more and more these days, and rightly so, is authenticity in film. I was so impressed that the experience of your film lent so heavily into practical effects. Was that an early decision to have, you know, your actors be plonked in real environments, those real trenches, those real explosions?
Yeah. And look, we did that with, and I'm going to quickly take a step back with like the Western, for instance. I wanted actual firearms on set, you know, like the old school days, you know, of cinema. And so by having those firearms, it then meant it wasn't like, oh, we've got CGI, you know, muzzle flares or whatever. It felt real, which really resonates with my target audience, who majority of the time are over the age of 35, 40, you know, so they've grown up seeing the real stuff, you know, that aesthetic on screen. So going into this one, it was the same thing. We had 300 303 rifles. 50 of them were actually from the 44th Battalion, so they served on the Western Front. And then going, okay, well, we want to build these trenches because I want to be able to put, I don't want green screen. I want the actors that when they're out there after a week, that they are finding it really, really hard. And that's 50% of the battle won. As a director, I'm fine. If I can put them there, if we can have actual pyrotechnics going off whilst, you know, cinema magic, it's not actually that loud on set, but it still added an extra sort of realism that even the crew, like at one stage, we got to a point after a week of filming and it was always raining, like, it was, you know, always raining down there. It was always windy. It was freezing. It was the wettest winter on record where we were filming.
Of course it was.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, and so it really tested all of us. It tested the crew. I found that, you know, the worse it got, the happier we got closer together, and, you know, things would go wrong and we'd all have a bit of a laugh. The first day, everything that could go wrong went wrong. of course, it's the first arm of sex. So immediately you're just like, oh, why? You know, that was bad. But then 2 weeks into filming, when things were going wrong, it was fantastic. You know, it was like, oh, that's, you know, or next minute someone was tripping in the mud in the background, or suddenly it was raining and we're all sitting there eating lunch and next minute it starts raining. And I look at everyone, we're like, yeah, we're going to shoot that other scene right now. The scene where Travis and Levi, that Jim and Nichols have the fight. It's like, it's raining. Let's go out and shoot that scene now. It's raining. And some of the crew that had worked with me for the first time thought I was absolutely mental.
Is that a feeling they still carry with them? End of it all?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, look, some of the crew go, look, John, we did a Western, which actually was in the coldest winter on record. We've done this one, the wettest winter on record. When are we going to do a film on like the Bahamas, you know, the beach? And
well, I mean, you're in control. You've got your own production company. You produce your own stuff. You direct everything. So I think, ball's in your court with that one, Jordan.
I don't know about that. I felt like putting, in fact, once we had the premiere recently, which was Australia's largest film premiere, right? So it was incredible. We had 1,500 people, plus people were still outside that were trying to get in. And we're like, well, no, you had to pre-book, et cetera. But
yeah.
It just shows you the scale of what this film has already done. The biggest feedback we're getting, I mean, people were coming out of the cinema in tears. They're all emotional, which was great. So it's like, cool, I've achieved that. But a lot of them were coming up going, oh, the mud. They said, we can feel the mud on us. And I'm like, yes. Brilliant.
I don't think I've ever seen so much mud in a film before, to be honest. I just want to quickly pull out the point you made about the premiere. That happened in WA, is that right?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and you filmed in Western Australia, and the Decadent and the Depraved is, you know, your last film you filmed there. Is filming in Western Australia something you wish to continue to do? Do you have an affinity with that state?
Not really. I definitely want to move interstate and start filming over east. I guess the thing with WA is I've got a lot of support here, but now I need to start growing. And it is very hard. I mean, you know, initially with the Western, I went to a certain government body and they didn't support it. With this one, I went to a government body, same sort of thing. And they're like, well, we don't really see the benefit for us, et cetera. So I was like, bugger. So I still went with the unconventional way of funding. I'm hoping that we've now done this, that I can go to other screen funding bodies and actually say, hey, look, we've now made two features. This feature, look at the scale that this has gone. This is what we're doing next. Can you come on board? But the next production is something that I will have to film scenes over east, because it is actually an Australian true story and it is set in various states. So Before Dawn was the impossible, and we're like, yep, let's do it anyway. And as I said recently to someone else, I'm like, well, what's next? I said, well, I need to find what's the next impossible thing to do, and I want to do it. And that is this next production, which is going to be filmed in all various states. So it's one of those things that I love WA. Don't get me wrong. I was born here. Everyone supported me here, but I'm Australian. I'm very proud Australian. I love telling Australian stories. So whilst Before Dawn is based on the 44th Battalion, we do have other battalions that are in there, but it's not like, oh yeah, this is a West Australian battalion. No, this is the ANZACs. This is an Australian story, and that's what we're putting forward.
And it's a really powerful one. I just wonder if what you can share about your next project, even just the genre, but appreciating, there we go. That was a tight-lipped gesture.
It's a big production. Again, it's another epic. It's character-driven, and it is another period piece. Yeah, some of the crew turned around to me and they're like, you just don't learn, do you?
Oh, I'm really excited to learn what that is, Jordan, and I'll be front and center watching that. I want to go back to the scale piece, and also something you mentioned before around everything that could go wrong did go wrong on the first day. But there was something you delivered in your film that nothing could go wrong at all. I stumbled across a quote from your third AD, Shane Day, and it said, there were reports on the news that there'd been an earthquake in Esperance, which is a beautiful part of the world, by the way, of 2.4 magnitude. That was our explosion. Now, you delivered some incredible explosions in this film, but talk to me about a shot that cost $1.4 million.
So we, look, going back to I want things for real, right? So the Hindenburg Line barrage is what they actually set this barrage, and they set it to go up the hill. And without getting too much in the history, the calibrations were a little bit closer to the ANZACs and that sort of thing. And so we wanted to do this rolling barrage and just show that for real. Yes, we had pyrotechnics on set, so we could actually do stuff for real. In fact, the drone shot in this film, there's parts of that drone shot that look CGI, but it's actually not. It's actual explosions going off. It's really bizarre. So you look at it and you go, oh, that's CGI. And it's like, no, that's just the way the wind was on the day. So it's actually real.
It's an unbelievable shot, my God.
Yeah, and we were flying blind, by the way. We lost transmission, so lost transmission. And then to make matters worse, then we went to do the shot a second time. We couldn't because we had 95 kilometer gust winds, so we had one take, and we looked back and we went, great, it's good, everyone's good, the extra didn't run where the pyro was, etc.
Right.
But yeah, going back to the big explosion, I wanted to do it for real, so it was 6 months worth dynamic drill and blast, Jonex explosives, coming out doing various surveys. We had drones out there doing marking of the grounds, et cetera, et cetera. Pretty much what happened is they were like, yeah, if we're going to do this for real, we're going to have like your cranes drilling into the ground. And so yeah, it was quite full on. It was a 6 month process to get that shot that's on screen for what, 4 seconds or something.
Yeah.
But it is so worth it because everybody that comes out of that cinema, they all talk about that in explosion and how scary it was. Yeah. Or, you know, can you imagine how scary it was being there in the trenches and seeing that coming up towards you? Like, that's insane. And that's the noise and yeah. So we wanted to do it for real, and it was an overcast day. I was 600 meters away. We did the countdown, pressed the button, and then we got a call a few minutes later, and it was all, you know, above board. We knew the Bureau of Meteorology, were informed, and they called us, said, just confirming that was you at 7:27 a.m. Oh, well, you reached 2.4 or whatever it was on the Richter scale. We're like, wow, you know, so we shook Esperance up, that's for sure.
Yeah, bit of an unexpected wake-up call for some locals. In wrapping up, Jordan, I've really loved talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. We're all about celebrating the joys of cinema here at Popcorn Podcast. Can you recall a moment in film you've seen or an experience at the cinema that brought you joy?
Wow, that's a hard one.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. Like I said to you, I watched a lot of the old school westerns and war films and all that, right? I actually got to go and see Heath Ledger in The Joker, you know, The Joker is The Dark Knight. And I remember seeing that going, wow, if that guy from Perth can do that, then it proves that anything's possible. My family, my partner, et cetera, we do have actually a connection with Guildford Grammar, the school that Heath went to. Mm. And so it was also an extra surreal moment going, you know, we felt like we knew this kid, this guy, and then I'm sitting there at the cinema going, you know, just blown away at his performance, but more so blown away the fact that, hang on, he's in a multi-million dollar production here that's been all around the world, and he's from Perth.
Yeah.
And that was, I guess, the moment that really shook me up to say, yeah, look, anything's possible as long as you're passionate and you keep striking while the iron's hot. Don't stop and keep doing it. And look, I've got an amazing team that I surround myself with, and I credit a lot of, or pretty much everything that I do, to them, because at the end of the day, you're only as good as the people that you surround yourself with, you know, my family, my partner, etc. And so being able to push forward and doing what I love doing, it's fantastic. But yeah, to answer your question, that was probably the moment. Look, I've had many moments in cinema where I've been emotional, I've had a laugh or whatever, but on a personal level, that was the moment that I kind of went, wow, if he can do it, anyone can do it.
I love that, Jordan, and I really enjoyed your film. Long live cinema, and all the best for the release of your movie.
Wonderful. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.
If we beat the Germans here, they'll run all the way back to Germany. We win this together, we go home together.
Gosh, we just love hearing from ambitious and driven filmmakers and how unconventional their approach to funding and getting their passion projects off the ground can sometimes be. It's really inspiring, isn't it?
You know, unconventional is such a good word, because everything he does is outside the box, from funding to changing course suddenly while filming, depending on what the weather is doing at the time. And it sounds like they were juggling quite the unknown seasons, four seasons in one day. It shows everyone can and should beat their own creative path. There's no right way to do filmmaking, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I completely appreciate the reactions people have had to this film. The mud, My God, the mud in this film is unrelenting. Yeah. The poor cast and crew and what they must have had to go through. But it's what it takes to tell stories like this, isn't it? Mm. So hats off to them for enduring those conditions to deliver such a poignant story as this one.
We hope you enjoyed this chat, because we will always love bringing them to you and lifting the lid on the filmmaking process and the stories of the people behind them.
Before Dawn is in Australian cinemas from April 4.
And as always, thank you so much for listening.
We'll catch you next time.
We have a website, popcornpodcast.com. Make sure you check it out. We've got all our episodes up there for you.
If you'd like to get to know us a little better, there's an About Us section and we run ticket giveaways. So keep an eye on the website for more information.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.